Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday night, January 31st. That means it's time for the Hoops HD report. I'm your
Woohoo!
host, Chad Sherwood, joined by a full panel of experts and one non-expert. Up top with me, David Dorman and John Tytel. Down below me, straight below me here, is the non-expert David Griggs, the puppet.
I'm an expert. I'm an expert.
Just not in basketball and maybe in
no, no, in
drinking
basketball. I'm an expert.
Getting arrested. Besides, we've
Only
got John
because I'm
Salica, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org back with us again.
An expert.
And we've got a lot to get to. Exciting games going on. We're recording this a little after 9:15 on Monday evening. But as we've been doing for most of these shows recently, I think we should start off with a blind resume again. I think it's one of our favorite things here. And if we can get the screen up, I'll cross our fingers on that one. We should have the we should have the screen share coming up, which means we've got the blind resume time. And I want to ask a couple of you about these two teams and ask you which one you like better, or are they even? Rocco, let me start with you this time. Take a look at these two resumes without, like Griggs did last time, giving away in 3 seconds. Can you, if you figured one of them out? But do you like one of these better than the other?
Well, if you're talking about an at-large opportunity, I don't think I can choose. I don't think I could choose the team on the right because they're 97th alone in net by the, and that's almost a de facto disqualifier. Like anything.
I know who that is. I know who that is.
So the other team's 40 in net. Not that your own net matters usually, but if you're in that extreme, I just don't think you can get selected. So by default, I guess I'll favor the team on the left.
All right. Well, if we go beyond looking, I actually thought about actually covering up the net numbers this week because of the, I saw that difference. But if we go a little bit beyond that, Salica, is there an argument here that the team on the right is pretty close to the team on the left, at least?
Well, we're talking about a team on the right that has a pretty horrid non-conference strength of schedule, but their record away from home overall seems to be a respectable 4-5. Their record at home is pretty decent, but I have a feeling I know who the team on the right is.
Yeah.
Given what Chad had did to his board earlier in his bracket prediction.
That might have been a minor giveaway. Let me go one other here. Tytel, is there an argument here for the team on the right, at least with those two road and one neutral wins in the top two quadrants versus just two neutral in the top two quadrants on the left?
Yeah, for the team on the right, Stalika points out the non-conference strength of schedule is worse, but ironically, the strength of schedule is much better than the team on the left. And as you see, that's including the team on the left playing against the number one net team in the country on the road and losing, albeit by 16 points. A very nice little schedule on the left, I think.
Yeah, on the left is a team that's been in most people's brackets all season, had a couple of slip-ups lately. It is the San Francisco Dons. On the right, a team that I don't think anybody's discussed all season, quite honestly. Angry Frank's
Angry
South
Frank.
Carolina Gamecocks.
I didn't know who it was.
Greg, does that kind of surprise you that the Gamecocks actually are not at the bubble, but you know, comparable to bubble teams at this point?
Yeah, it kind of does, to be honest, especially having watched them play a few times and not been impressed at all. The win over UAB at home was one that I kind of chalked up to UAB, you know, kind of choking it away a little bit. They are not on the bubble and certainly not inside it, but I will say this, like with the schedule they have remaining, they can at least reach it. If they finish strong. Now, I don't think they're going to do that. In fact, winning at Mississippi State just because it's a road game against the team that's won a lot at home would be a big step forward. It wouldn't get them all the way there, but it would certainly get them a lot closer. It's within reach. But what about this San Francisco team? We've been high on them all year. Only two true road wins. Their biggest win arguably is a very close game against UAB. They've had missed opportunities. They blew it against St. Mary's. They had a second half lead against Loyola, couldn't hold on, did not beat BYU. A lot of these games are close, but eventually they have to win one. And are they running out of chances to do that?
Well, when you're not beating teams that are in the NCAA tournament field, that's something I'm not going to look highly upon. And I think Joby would say the same thing, but he's not here tonight.
Yeah.
Rocco, have you had the Gamecocks anywhere near your board? And maybe is it time to start taking a little look at them, especially if they look at this kind of at Mississippi State home against Tennessee and Kentucky. The home games are favorable, at least that the tough games are at home.
Yeah, I would just say that for the time being, they're not on the short list. They wouldn't be in the next 20 teams out because they simply just look at all the wins. None of those teams are above the cut line right now. UAB's close, but and Florida State's fallen off. But the way it stands at this moment, there's nothing really enticing to look at. Plus, you have those two terrible losses in Tier 3.
Couldn't you also argue here that they both teams beat UAB and isn't winning at A&M at Vandy and neutral versus Florida State a little better than beating Davidson and nobody?
Well, so the Dons beat UAB in Vegas, which is different than South Carolina beating them at home.
Okay.
But obviously they're different quadrants, but I don't know. The Davidson win for the Dons is good too, because that's a team solidly in. So
I'll tell you what, let's go to some standings but here.
I like where your head's at. I like where your head's at.
It's just a team that kind, they really caught my attention this weekend when they beat A&M in the one of two games that were not SEC big challenge games. And talk about the SEC as a whole. SEC wins the SEC Big 12 tournament 6-4, challenge 6-4, which, you know, kind of surprises how much we've been praising the Big 12 this season. But I guess, Dorman, let me start with you. What game really stood out for you the most here in this weekend's games between these two conferences?
It wasn't the best game, but Kentucky just absolutely went in to Fog Allen into Kansas on Saturday and ran him out of the building. Kansas was looked terrible, to be honest. I like Kentucky's D. I like Kentucky's offense. They worked the ball, and Kansas looked out of sorts. I don't know if it was Kansas played bad, but Kentucky looked awfully strong on Saturday, and they are streaking at the right time.
Like I said, that was one of the most impressive wins I think we have all season by anybody. The other impressive win by the SEC, though, Salika, Alabama, albeit at home, beat Baylor.
I don't think it matters when you consider that, as Titel has pointed out in the email thread, they've now beaten three teams from last year's Final Four. So go ahead and throw in a win against Gonzaga that was a de facto road game in Seattle. They also have the win against Houston, which was also at home. But the biggest problem for Alabama is, as good as the top is, the bottom just smells pretty awful, especially with Missouri and Georgia. That could give South Carolina a run for their money as far as bad losses go.
Yeah, the bottom is awful on the Tier 4 side. Not a single Tier 4 win. I mean, nobody has not a single Tier 4 game. That's a pretty impressive strike, the schedule, making it number one overall in the nation right now, the SOS.
Right. I think.
Sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Looking ahead, I mean, they're probably shooting for the moon this weekend when they go to Auburn. As good as they've been, I just think that that's a little bit out of their reach. But the games that are big are the game at Ole Miss and the game at Vanderbilt. I kind of think that that's low hanging fruit against non tournament teams that are true road games, and they only have the one now. They have the win in
Seattle.
I'm sorry,
Griggs. Did you just say that a team that has been the number one, number two, and number four team in the net is out of their league going to Auburn?
Yeah.
I don't know how you can say that.
Rocco,
you're shaking your head too at that.
Absolutely. I mean, Alabama has six quad 1A wins. The next closest team in the country has four. If anybody knows how to beat top teams, it's this team.
They know how to do it at home.
They did it in Seattle too.
Yeah. I just, the way Auburn's playing, I just don't think, maybe they can, but the ones that they need to win the winnable games to round out their resume. Otherwise, like, I just think that the one true road win is kind of weighing it down right now. It wasn't to say that, like, they have no chance against Auburn so much as it was they need to beat Ole Miss and Vanderbilt.
By the same token, it's one thing for Auburn to sleepwalk in Missouri, but I can't see them possibly sleepwalking against an Iron Bowl rival right here.
Well, they're not going to sleepwalk. I just think they're going to get beat. Auburn's really good, and they're at home. I mean, if they go to Auburn and win, that you're talking about a win that's as good as like what Kentucky just did at Kansas. I mean, that would just be an unbelievably awesome win.
Or it's kind of like being three out of the top five teams of the nation in the same season, all of whom were in the Final Four last year.
If they go there and do it.
Let's move on here. I pulled up Arkansas on the right here. They picked up a win over West Virginia that may not be that great of a win at the end of the day, the way West Virginia's going right now. But you know, six wins in a row now for the Razorbacks.
Very weird schedule. So they started 9-0, dropped 5 of 6, and as you said, now won 6 in a row. They get Georgia and Mississippi State this week. Should be 2 wins. And then they host the big bad Auburn Tigers on February 8th. Under 30% from behind the arc is atrocious, obviously. It hasn't hurt them. They've won 6 in a row. Senior guard J.D. Notte, he missed the final game of 2021 against Mississippi State with an illness. 8 games since then, he's been unbelievable. 20 points a game, 4 assists a game, 2 steals a game. They have not been in my bracket all month long. I put him in last weekend as an 11 seed.
Yeah, this team, I think we gave up on, and we love again. Now it's kind of weird. Somebody's beeping at me there. I guess Rocco, one other team that I think worth a brief mention at least is the Florida Gators. Way down there, right on the bubble cut line, but did bounce back with the Oklahoma State win, which doesn't move you up too much, but it keeps you from moving down, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did have Florida like third team out on right. Friday, and now they're the fifth team out, so they actually did move down, but it wasn't because of them. It's because other teams just played great below them. But that Florida situation without Colin Castleton healthy is very treacherous. They were lucky to survive. They were down. If you look at the halftime stats,
they're down. I'm sorry 13. About that. I hit the wrong button. Go ahead.
That was
that?
What was that?
We were gonna get the chop there, but they were down 13 at halftime in that game, Chad, and then had to come storming back second half just to win. They're a much weaker team without Castleton, so you got to watch out for that. If he can't get back soon, they're in a lot of trouble. They got three straight non tournament teams coming up too, so that could be more bad losses on the way.
Right. This week's schedule in the SEC has some very big games. A huge Alabama-Auburn game coming up tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's going to be very hard for Alabama to win.
Followed by Kentucky. Saturday, we've got Kentucky at Alabama. We've got Kentucky at Alabama. We've got Arkansas with a game at Georgia, the home game in Mississippi State that was mentioned. So LSU with a kind of a week off with Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, I guess. But the other half of the SEC Big 12 challenge, of course, was the SEC. And let's talk about the four SEC teams that did pick up wins.
Are you talking about the Big 12 challenge?
The four Big 12 teams that picked up wins. I'm trying to stop, make sure that I don't get music going off again during Rocco talking by moving my phone around and trying to talk at the same time. It's not, somebody else just say something. Titel, Big 12, Texas. How about that?
The Longhorns lost 3 of 4 in mid-January to fall to 3-3 in conference play, bounced back 3 straight wins over Oklahoma State, TCU, and Tennessee. They cannot enjoy it that long. The next 4 are brutal. Texas Tech, Iowa State, Kansas, and Baylor. Good luck. One reason they beat the Vols by a single point, Tennessee horrible from the free throw line, 8 of 16. But it wasn't just an isolated incident. Texas opponents this year, the worst in the nation, 62% from the line. You'd think it'll revert to the mean at some point, but not yet. Senior guard Courtney Ramey, he was bad in a home loss to Kansas State by 1 point a couple weeks ago. He only had 5 points on 2 of 8 shooting. The past 3 wins, he's been great. 14 points a game, 8 of 20 behind the arc, only 1 turnover a game. I have them as a 7 seed.
Okay. Texas team going the right direction. Another big, huge win, I thought, actually, was TCU Dorman not taking it down LSU this weekend.
Jamie Dixon doing an incredible job at TCU. I thought LSU would be just crush TCU on the boards, and athletically, I just thought they were too much down low. TCU played great. They got to play the pace they wanted. LSU looked frustrated. Jamie Dixon's game plan was perfect and dead on. TCU knocked down the shots they needed to down the stretch and came out with a huge win. I know on this show we've debated TCU in, out, and TCU looks good and strong. I mean, this conference is loaded, and they are hanging around.
And that just makes Texas's win there earlier in the week look even more impressive to me. As someone that was beating up on the Horns for not doing anything, they've certainly done things now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, as we record this, TCU has an 8-9 point lead early on at Oklahoma this evening. So, you know, TCU doing it again on the road again, at least on the road this time. Rocco, on the other half of the Big 12, going in the wrong direction, I think we have a pair of teams, both Oklahoma and West Virginia. Am I right?
I think you are. Yeah, you know, West Virginia's on a 5-game skid, including a home loss to that Oklahoma team. So you'd have to say West Virginia's even in bigger, dire straits, although the other losses are to 3 protected seeds in Arkansas, who's also really hot. West Virginia's going to Baylor tonight. Not a good way to turn it around. Then they host Texas Tech on Saturday. Might not be another easy game at all. So this league is just really brutal. And every year there's going to be a team in that like 6th to 8th place range that's just going to, you know, get brutalized. And that happens to be West Virginia at this current time.
Yeah, that's Stalika, you know, and Oklahoma, down double digits now to TCU at home. They lose this one. I think that, you know, 3-6 in conference is not a good place to be in a conference as strong as it.
Yeah, this is a team that looked like it was coming off of the ropes with the win at West Virginia, but that probably says more about the Mountaineers struggling big time right now, because the Sooners, I mean, you want to get a nice little winning streak going, but if TCU's suddenly looking pretty hot, that's a potential team you're competing against as far as an NCAA bid. So this is not a good development for the Sooners if this result holds up.
Yeah, those two games going on as we record this, but the big game in this conference is tomorrow night, Texas at Texas Tech. Chris Beard's return. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter or not, but they're all Texas Tech fans are already in his face as he arrived tonight.
They are fired up.
I mean, they're just so anxious. They're so happy to see him again that they're just so appreciative of how he put that program into the national spotlight, and they can't wait to see him tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to the fireside chat that Chris Beard does before each game. Can't wait for him to go out there to all the people camping out and just do, you know, pull up and do a little fireside chat with everybody. I'm sure it's gonna be warm and fuzzy.
And by the way, we've got Baylor, Kansas on Saturday, Tytel. You know, just throw that in, you know, even after all those fireworks.
I mean, I don't know if the winner of that game is a 1 seed, but they're looking pretty darn strong to me.
Yeah, it's possible the winner and the loser of that is a 1 seed. But yeah, well, what a week in the Big 12.
Let's jump over to the Big East now as we wait for one game to go final here as we record this show. Maybe go final, or maybe go about 10 overtimes for all we know, the Iowa-Penn State game as we record this. But let's jump over to the Big East instead. And I guess let's start with Providence maybe. And Tytel, Providence goes to Xavier, wins, then beats Marquette. How impressed are we?
Very. So this team got blown out by 32 at Marquette earlier this month. All they've done since then, 5 wins in a row, beat Xavier on the road by 3, won the home rematch with Marquette by 2. I understand they're close wins, but they are wins, so they get the credit. 3 winnable games ahead. They face Villanova twice in the final 15 days of the regular season. So I hope they have something left in the tank because they're going to need it. They also need to get some more consistency from the senior big man, Nate Watson. 18 points against Butler, scoreless against Xavier, 17 against Marquette. I have them as a 5 seed. They are trending very nicely.
I'll tell you.
Oh, man, I'm a little surprised you didn't have them even higher. Look at that profile. Wow.
Well, first of all, Grace, there are some asterisks by the Connecticut and the Wisconsin wins. Both teams were off their best players for those games.
I don't see asterisks. Where are the asterisks?
But
look, I just see tier 1A.
I was going to point to the remaining schedule. You noted the 2 Villanova games. I think every other game in the schedule is a game they should win, too. I mean, Xavier at home, though. Creighton, it's at home, though. This could be a very, very impressive winning streak they can go on heading into the Villanova games.
Yeah, and Chad, all kidding aside, and yes, there are asterisks by those wins, but with the way they've been playing, A, and then B, with the chances that they have in front of them, just like you mentioned, I think that they can basically say that with or without the asterisks, they belong in the protected seed range, and it wasn't the fact that those teams were shorthanded weren't the only reason they won those games. Providence has been fantastic all season long. I'm a little surprised that they're still not a little bit higher in the rankings. I think they're in the mid-teens.
15.
Should they be in the top 10? I mean, look at that.
Well, they're 15. They're 15 today and climbing. One of the things is the predictive metrics down in the 40s. It's you know, 46 KenPom is very, very mediocre.
If Joey were here, I'd ask him to possibly explain that.
Great. I don't understand.
I can explain that to you, actually. Okay. Look at the fact that when they lost, it was blowouts both times. When they've been winning these big games, they've been close games. It's a funny metric to look at here. The KenPom advanced metrics, though, look at their luck rating, number one in the nation. What that means is that KenPom is saying that their actual record is way better than what the record should be based on the way they've performed on the court. That's what the luck metric means. So a team with a super high luck, number one in the nation, means they've won more than they should have based on what what players they have and the way their players have played these games.
And Chad, Ed Cooley was asked about that earlier this week, and he's totally embracing it. He's like, he's proud that they're number one in luck. He wants to be number one in luck every year, and he's happy to carry the title.
I would love to be number one in luck.
I mean, I love his responses. It's awesome.
Stalika, how about one of the teams that Providence beat this week? Your Musketeers.
Yeah, it was kind of weird that, as Titel mentioned, Nate Watson had a goose egg, at least on the scoring part of his stat sheet against the Musketeers. But that also says you've got guys like Noah Horchler and Croswell and Bynum picking up the slack. But as far as Xavier goes, I mean, that was a game that they nearly stole because they were down as many as 14 in the first half. They came back, they took a tough loss. And then Creighton, it's almost like they got two games for the price of one because they fall behind 36-19. And lo and behold, the second half begins. They get a 19-0 run, and then it extends to 29-2 because the Blue Jays just couldn't figure out what to do on either half of the floor. But this is what happens when you get guys like Nate Johnson finally warming up from three, Jack Nungy showing he can also be a deep threat from three as well. But you look at the Big East, you got Nungy, you got Noah Horchler for Providence who can also hit the long ball. This is not a conference where you can just sleep on centers around the arc.
I think this deserves a little more commentary. It was 36-19 at halftime, and before Creighton scored again, Xavier had the lead.
Yeah, it was a 29-2 run.
Absolutely.
That is not something that happens very often.
At Creighton, they're really good in their building usually.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
I'll tell you what. Rocco, what about Creighton? Because I think you actually have them as a team that's out right now, which kind of surprised me, despite some pretty good wins, including the Villanova and the at Marquette wins.
Yeah, I love those three wins, the at Marquette, the neutral BYU, the Nova. Those are all great wins. But, you know, you go quadrant by quadrant, in the top two, they're just 3-6. They're 8-7 in the top three. And then you just look at the strength of record, they're just 70th. I mean, that's pretty far out of bounds. They're 73rd in their own personal net, and their non-conference strength of schedule, if you're going to give them one of those last spots, is 212, also very risky. If you look at their Q1, Q2 away wins, which is something I like to look at for tiebreaker purposes. They have the one over Marquette, but that's it. So if they can start to build even a collection of tier twos, like go win at Butler, go win at DePaul, things like that in February, I think they get right the ship. But for now, I just think there's a couple sexier options out of the beauty pageant that we get to select from.
Now, one of the other interesting things we have to bring up for Creighton this week was there was actually two games where Greg McDermott was out because of a COVID protocols, and one of them was the loss at Butler. This is one of those situations where the selection committee would say, we would consider his absence. We're not necessarily going to excuse it.
Right. Though they said they will consider it, which means that they will mention it, and they could all vote based on that. But I don't know that. I think you got to do. I like Rocco's point that you got to do have a little more total meat to the.
You got to win at Butler. I mean, look at the year they're having.
Butler blew them out too. You know?
Yeah.
Bad sign.
Dorman, the team on the left is the Seton Hall Pirates. I don't think this is one of those sexier options that Rocker was talking about, though. They've been playing lately.
Probably not. As I put together my bracket this morning, they were one of my last two to make it. They are 3-6, as you can see there in Big East play, but they've lost four of their last five. Tomorrow they go to Georgetown. That is a must-have. They cannot afford that bad loss. Everyone is cracking Georgetown. They have to get that. But after that, the next four games will make or break their season. They're home to Creighton and Xavier. They got to get some momentum winning those two, because then they travel to Villanova and Connecticut. These next four games will basically be everything for Kevin Willard's Pirates.
Griggs, one more team quickly in the Big East here. I pulled the UConn Huskies up on the right there. It seems like this is just a team that maybe it's just because they really had a tough games in a few weeks, and we haven't really been discussing them much, but yeah, quietly a very strong profile, I think.
It is really strong, and it isn't just that their profile is strong. I think that their team is good. You know, the only team that's beaten Auburn did it on a neutral floor, a really nice win at Marquette, some other like nuggets, you know, the win at DePaul, not easy, nice neutral floor win against St. Bonaventure. But I hate to steal Tytel's thunder, because I know that this is his field, but look at these losses. 4 points against Michigan State, who I think is a solid protected seed, a close loss to Providence, who we just got done talking about, and then 3-point losses to Seton Hall and West Virginia. So when you add all that up, you know, they're not that many points away from not having any losses.
Yeah, and a much bigger week this week with Creighton and at Villanova for them. Huge week, actually, for the Huskies.
Yeah. But no, this UConn team is, I think, better than what they're getting credit for. They're good.
In fact, here is the rest of the upcoming schedule for the week. We noted some of these games already. The Creighton-UConn game tomorrow, the UConn at Villanova on Saturday. What else we've got there? Villanova at Marquette on Wednesday. So lots of big games here on the schedule. But I think we can now go over to the Big Ten, because the game we were watching has gone final. And maybe as we head over there, Rocco, Iowa goes and loses a game at Penn State, and after already having a bad loss at Rutgers earlier, and Hawkeyes in bad shape now. They're now fall to 4-6 in the conference, not 4-5 like it's on the screen.
Yeah, so for the Hawkeyes, you're looking at a team that is kind of middle of the bracket, like in that 7-9 range before today. They've got a big hole. They haven't won a game on the road against a team in the field. And the problem is when you're in the Big Ten, you get multiple chances almost every week. So it's hard to know. Keegan Murray is clearly one of the best players, scorers in the country. I think they have a fighting chance against most teams. You know, there's some of their metrics that aren't great, but the predictive people love them. They were number 20 if you average out all the predictives this morning. So I'll probably take a couple spots back. But in general, like, they're still very selectable, and they're going to have a lot more chances. So I'm curious to see where it goes.
Real quick about predictive ratings. I know that these are kind of general indicators. The idea that the predictive ratings like Iowa more than Providence is a little bit preposterous to me. But
I know I hate that too, honestly, as a traditional you know, bracket guy. But like, yeah, when you're in the middle of the bracket, it just seems like the selection committee cares more about that for seeding than anything else. When you're closer to the cut line, I think it's the other way around.
Rocco, I think my problem with Iowa right now is with the Penn State loss, they now have two losses to teams that are not going to make the field. They only have one win over a team that is going to make the field as an at large with Indiana. You could throw Longwood in there as a second tournament win, but that's not quite a real tournament win.
Yeah. It could start getting out of balance. We see this with the Big Ten almost every year, where there's a team or two that they get stuck in the middle, and then all their quad records just get thrown out of balance, and it's hard to select them at that point. That could happen here.
Let's go up to the top of the Big Ten, though, and both Tytel and Dorman, I know you want to speak about the team on the right. Let me start with you, Tytel. The Purdue Boilermakers, they are looking pretty darn good right now, huh?
Bounced back from the loss at Indiana a couple weeks ago with three good wins. Beat Northwestern by 20, beat Iowa on the road by 10, hung on for dear life to beat the Buckeyes by three on Sunday. They head to Minnesota Wednesday. They host Michigan Saturday, a couple of winnable games. They get it done inside, 57% from two-point range is number eight in the nation. They get it done from the outside, 41% behind the arc, number three in the nation. And sophomore guard Jaden Ivey, he missed the Northwestern game a week ago with a hip injury, saved their season on Sunday with a game-winning three in the final second to beat the Buckeyes, just as he did in Columbus last year. He's a Buckeye killer. A lot of people have them as a two seed. I put them up to a one seed this week ahead of Kansas UCLA, partially because of that game, partially because they're that good.
Dorman, you agree with him. One seed for Purdue.
John stole everything. John must have taken my notes this morning because they moved back to the one seed. I'm right with John on that. They looked really good doing it. My one problem with Matt Painter is he's got to let Jaden Ivey go. In Purdue's offense, it's very set. Painter likes to control it. He likes everyone to work within the structure of the offense. He's got to let Jaden Ivey go. This kid is a stud. This kid is a professional player, and he can score going down the stretch here and going into the tournament. Let him go. Let him shoot a little more. Let him get hot, because he's a guy you can ride in the tournament to the Final Four. Get Ivey the ball.
And let's take a look at the rest of the Big Ten here. Stalika, Illinois sitting there at 8-2, Michigan State at 7-2, but are they as good as Purdue? And they are ahead of them in the standings.
Well, Illinois did get the head-to-head against a shorthanded Michigan State team, but that was another game where the Illini had to hang on for dear life. But once Coburn is healthy again for the Illini, it should also give them a bit of a boost right here. But I still have a feeling that Michigan State's probably going to have a little more staying power right now as far as the regular season goes.
Yeah, and Griggs, just when we're starting to talk about Michigan Wolverines getting back into something, Michigan State just handed it to them this weekend.
Yeah, they did, and you can't really expect them. I mean, a team that's clinging to the bubble and not even really on it to beat a team that's clearly a protected seed. But yeah, they did get hammered, and they just didn't even look like a tournament team. They have at times, but more often than not, they haven't looked like it. I don't know. I mean, we always speculate who's the team that's outside the bubble that's going to thunder down the stretch and get in. Could it be them? I guess it could be, but they're, from what I've seen, they've shown no signs of being able to do it, at least not consistently. But, if they win it, with that being said, I probably just guaranteed that they were going to win at Purdue on Saturday. And how about this game Wednesday, this Whiskey at Illinois game? Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably the game of the week this week in the Big Ten.
Honestly, I think as much as I hate to interrupt, Chad, I think the game of the week is going to be on Saturday. Can Michigan State overcome the curse of Jersey Mike's?
I think you're right. But Iowa also the big week, though. They've got to bounce back, and they've got at Ohio State and home to Minnesota, so it's not exactly an easy way to bounce back.
They need road wins. They kind of, God, they blew one tonight.
Let's jump out west to the Pac-12, and maybe we should start at the bottom of the Pac-12, Tytel. I think that's where you want to go. Actually, it's actually fifth place, but their last few years have been at the bottom of the Pac-12 at least.
But the key is actually fifth place. They started this year 6-7. They've won five of their past six with only a road loss in Eugene. They head to the Bay Area for a road trip this week, then a brutal three-game stretch in mid-February. Arizona, USC, UCLA, back-to-back-to-back. Horrible shooting team. They're outside the top 300 from two-point land and three-point land, so they must be getting it done with defense. And Arizona transfer Terrell Brown. He was 4 of 16 from the field in the loss at Colorado 3 weeks ago. Past six games, he's been great. 24 points a game, 3 assists, 2 steals a game. Coach Mike Hopkins starts 4 seniors. He better be very active in the transfer portal this summer because he's losing like his whole starting lineup.
Yeah, Washington, that's the most amazing stat, I think, is that 6-3 record. I know you're a Washington guy, but there may be a team a couple spots below them in the standings here that's looking a lot better in Stanford right now.
Yeah, you look at Stanford as a potential tournament team. One thing that jumps off the page when you do a breakdown of them as a potential tournament squad is they got four wins against the field after sweeping USC. They also have the Wyoming neutral win and a win over Oregon, if you consider Oregon a team in the field. So that's going well for them. The problem is they're just not playing well enough overall. They're still stuck in the 90s in the net themselves. Pretty good strength of record at 49, which helps. So I do think Stanford's close. I think I have them as my fourth team out, much higher than I would have expected before I did the exercise last night. And so I definitely keep your eye on the trees. Harrison Ingram wins the Freshman of the Week award almost every week. I got the email today. He won it again. Just a phenomenal kid and player. You know, last year they had Zaire Williams as the phenom, but, you know, he just wasn't very efficient. He was also a contributor to a little bit of locker room issues. Harrison Ingram could not be further from that. He's just been tremendous for them, and this team has come together much better than I would have ever anticipated before the season started.
This is just, the one thing that's – I mean, they've got the low net. That's one of the biggest net to RPI discrepancies I've seen maybe ever.
There's the old RPI right below it at 28. That's the difference.
Right. Right.
But that's a huge difference, yeah.
Yeah, J&G likes them a little bit. I think that they're closer than what the 89 indicates.
Yeah,
I would imagine that will sort of like even it's that'll sort of fix itself if they keep winning at the clip that they have been, and they've got three winnable games coming up. Another team. Well, where are you going next?
I was actually wanting to talk to Dorman about the team I put on the right here, and that's the team that Rocco mentioned. If you think Oregon's a tournament team, well, that's a big if after what happened this week with the home loss to a Colorado, not only home loss to Colorado, and Colorado then lost by 3 million points on Sunday night to Wazoo. So not a good loss at all for Oregon.
Everyone's got my notes today, Chad.
Sorry.
Oregon, the Ducks, 6-3 in Pac Conference play. And when I did my bracket this morning, they were one of the last few I had to leave out. And just like you said, things were going well. They were hot off the LA trip. And then they lose to Colorado. You can't do that when what they did in the non-conference, which was nothing. So now, ironically, the big game of the season comes this week because they're going to Colorado. They cannot get swept by Colorado this year, meaning if they don't win this week, they are in huge trouble, Oregon. So a lot riding on the Ducks when they go to Colorado later this week.
Yeah, you take out January 13th or January 15th off of this schedule for Oregon, and
they've got nothing.
There's nothing here.
Totally agree.
Their entire season is 3 days right now, and I don't put a team in for 3 days. Griggs, you want to go somewhere to this conference?
Well, I wanted to look at a team who has a good net, and when you look at the rest of their resume, you're like, man, that's a good net. Wazoo.
Okay. They did blow out Colorado last night, so yeah. Go ahead.
And they were kind of a team that we were actually big on. I know this was a million years ago, but coming into the year, they were everybody's dark horse, and they gave us reasons, at least at times, to think that they were right. Now, if you look at Quad 1 and Quad 2, you'll notice that it's lacking a little bit. They could use some better wins, but like...
I'll tell you what, Greg, so this is a great example. Maybe we were talking about Providence earlier, the big discrepancy. Look at their predictive metrics. Look at that luck number, 351. They're the unluckiest team in the nation, or one of them.
They're the unluckiest team. And then talk about a net to RPI discrepancy the other way. I don't know. But I do think that they're capable of playing well. And when you look at some of their losses, Boise's really good. They were right in that game. South Dakota State really good, right in that one. Nearly beat USC, kind of blew that one, really. All of their points, all of their losses by 5 points or less, which could explain the high net against the weak merit of the resume. Are they good enough to be that team that makes that run that we're always talking about and gets inside the bubble?
I think they're good enough to be that team that makes the run that Oregon State made last year, but that's about the only run I think they make to make the field right now. And I don't know that you could do it against this Pac-12 either, unless the crazy things happen in March.
You got the two road games coming up.
Sleek, I think we'd be remiss if we don't mention UCLA's week here. Beating up on Arizona, beating Cal, taking care of Stanford big. the Bruins are nearing one seed, are they not?
Well, it's going to be hard to argue against the Bruins because at this point, with USC looking like kind of a nouveau riche program, it's literally going to come down to UCLA and Arizona. And UCLA won round one pretty convincingly. So it's amazing how once Mick Cronin got out of Cincinnati, he's actually started to dominate all of his rivals here, USC and Arizona, and getting a win against Stanford, also pretty critical.
And heck of a week for Arizona, I think. Tytel, they're your team coming up here. Host UCLA, host USC at Arizona State.
Pretty big week. I still can't believe that we beat the Sun Devils because when we were 0 of 13 from behind the arc in the first half, I was like, you know, I've seen this movie every year where like the worst team ruins the better team's season. But thank God they pulled it out in the second half because that last thing you want on national TV is a home loss to the Sun Devils.
Yeah, it's so the big week of the Pac-12. But let's go to the ACC. How about that?
Yeah.
This is conference bubble right now, I think. I put together a bracket, and I think I had five teams from the ACC in my first four. That's But we've got beyond Duke, who, you know, did continue to win, pick up a big win over Notre Dame tonight, even blew out Louisville. We've got this group here of maybe Miami on the good side, but North Carolina, Notre Dame, Wake Forest, Florida State. Rocco, let me start with you here in this ACC group. You know, we've got the few teams we liked. I think Wake and Florida State are heading in the wrong direction, are they not?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, it's kind of like a pregnant Mountain West, just a much larger version of the Mountain West, besides Duke, of course. But just so many teams that are in that like 50 to 110 range. And, you know, you like to think Notre Dame beating Virginia on Saturday meant something. But obviously we saw Notre Dame today and it really didn't do much for their metrics after Saturday was all said and done. So you've got a situation where, like, the way I see it is Carolina is really solid in both strength of record and predictives, both in the 30s. But they're 0-6 in all their meaningful games. And on the flip side, they're undefeated in all the other games. So it's one of the most bizarre resumes out there today. I think that'll change over time. They're just an unbelievable road team, or sorry, home team, terrible road team. But there's another month of season, so hopefully that works itself out. Wake Forest is in extreme danger if they stand near the cut line with that 326 non-conference straight the schedule sticking out like a sore thumb. They need to get up to the 10 or 9 line for me to feel comfortable putting them in. Right now, I put them as the first team out. I think they grade out as a team that should be in, but with that and really no precedent of a team getting selected that close to the cut, I'm putting them out. And then you've got Notre Dame, who's close but just got blown out tonight. Florida State keeps sliding, and Virginia Tech's just a mile away with all their quadrant record issues. I think they're 6-10 against the top three. So
they're 11-10 overall. You're not getting it. You're not there.
No. Yeah. So you got a lot of teams that sound good on paper, but then when you start to really look at them, you're like, man, this is bad.
And well, Tytel, let's start with this North Carolina team that's on the right there. This is one of the strangest profiles I've ever seen.
Right.
And I don't know what to do. I understand putting them in.
You do not
know
what to do with that.
And I understand Griggs telling me they shouldn't be anywhere near the field. And I want to agree with both of you.
So there are some puppets that want to push this, that wanted to push this team off the bubble a couple weeks ago. They had back-to-back losses at Miami and Wake by 18-plus points each. Terrible, right? Coach Hubert Davis has somewhat righted the ship. Three straight wins. They scored 100 against NC State. They're 15-6 overall, and somehow they are one game out of first place in the ACC. They head to Louisville Tuesday. They host the Dukies on Saturday. Top 20 in the nation behind the arc, 38%. Sophomore guard Caleb Love, he was terrible in those back-to-back losses. Only 14 combined points. He made 5 of 27 from the field. I'm happy to report, as Valentine's Day approaches, Love is alive and well. During the three-game winning streak, he scored 20 points a game, made 9 of 18 behind the arc, 4 assists a game. I have them as one of the last teams on the right side of the bubble.
Yeah, the game at Louisville. Louisville has no head coach anymore. They're losing their top players who are getting thrown out, so I give them a good chance there. But, Griggs, they're playing some team called Duke on Saturday. Yeah.
Well,
I think it's time to check in on something. Our rivalry checker.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, we haven't seen this in forever, the rivalry checker.
Let's find out some information about North Carolina and Duke here. Let's see what it says. 8 miles apart, they've never made the NCAA tournament. That is amazing.
That is incredible. Like, and really, like, how does it know that? Like, what's the program?
There's all kinds of calculations in here. This workbook does everything. It does everything.
8 miles apart and have never met in the NCAA tournament. And that isn't likely to happen this year, or shouldn't, if North Carolina's profile doesn't get any better. Michigan outside the bubble, not good on the road. Virginia Tech way even further out and even worse on the road. They have not done anything.
I'm with David on this. They don't have a win against a tournament team. I know 7-3 sounds good in the ACC, but this isn't your usual ACC, so I don't really give it that much. If North Carolina, if we were dealing with a different school and this was South Carolina, I don't think they'd be anywhere close to the bubble. They have two more opportunities in each game with Duke. Besides that, I don't see an impressive win. Miami's really good. They score the ball. They lost to Miami. I really think Miami and Duke are the only two teams worthy of bids from the ACC.
Well, North Carolina.
Four of those 7 wins were against Georgia Tech and Boston College.
Right.
I'll tell you what, though. North Carolina, every single one of their losses was against a team that's either in the field or close to the field. The Notre Dame loss, for example. And they do have a win against the field with the Appalachian State win. Come on. They're my Sun Belt representative right now.
I stand corrected there.
Notre Dame at least beat Kentucky, which will probably be a 2 or 3 seed come Thursday's show.
Yeah.
Right. Let's keep rolling things along here. Stalika, the upcoming schedule in the ACC, any games here that you're really circling besides maybe the North Carolina games?
I'm probably going to look at Florida State and Clemson on Wednesday just to see if Florida State can get out of their cold spell right here. And then you have to fast forward to Saturday, where they're also going to be hosting Wake, which is going to be pretty important for both teams.
Yeah, that's probably the game of the week here, because that may be the winner in, loser out in next week's brackets, at least at this point in time. Let's jump over to the American Conference. We're kind of trying to stall a little bit here while we wait for another game to go final. And let's see here. Stalika, how about a couple teams here in the American, actually. Stalika, I know you want to talk about two of them, both Cincinnati and SMU, correct?
Yeah, because we talked last week, could Cincinnati have been the one team that could be the second bid out of the American? And they had a road trip to Temple in the East Carolina. Oof. Temple was a game where they actually had a lead for about 35, 36 minutes of the way, but unfortunately fell apart late in that game. And with the whole country watching, they were behind for a good chunk of the East Carolina game, but they did hit a game winner to at least escape Greenville. So they stay 1-1 for now. So that's why I had to bring up SMU as the other potential team right here. Outside of a bad exempt tournament back in November where they lose to LMU and Missouri, otherwise they've been a pretty respectable 16-2. But again, the big problem is they don't have a win against a team that's likely making the tournament right here.
Right. And Rocco, I saw you were on a podcast earlier with Lucas, who was there with you, and was making the case that SMU should be in the field right now. Are you there?
No, I think he had him like first four out. But
I think it's first four out. You're right.
Yeah, but I'm not even that close, honestly. I'm pretty far out, like 10 spots out. The reason for my reason there is they've only played one tournament caliber team. They lost that game. They're only 1-2 in the first quadrant and a half, 2-2 in the first two. They have a 3-12 non-conference with the schedule. That's just like smell you later. You look at the road wins in Q1, Q2, it's only at Tulane, the only one they have. And that LMU loss keeps getting worse. So their strength of record's in the 50s, their own net's in the 50s. And they have that bad loss that's now in Q4. And there's just way too many things on the wrong side of the equation right now. I do like the team in general. I like watching them. I think they're good. It's just one of those things, just not enough opportunities.
Well, Two games against Houston left, so that's going to be the, that's going to be that's where they get their shots.
That's it. And the conference tournament is in their backyard, which always helps.
Yes. Tytel, should we talk a little bit about Tulane?
Only a little, I promise. Started 5-7 this year. Home losses to Southern and Charleston. They have won 4 of 6, 9-9 overall. Somehow third in the conference standings at 6-3. Their reward for all that, they get to go to Houston on Wednesday. They're probably going to lose by 20 points. Coach Ron Hunter has one of the youngest teams in the country, including LSU transfer Jalen Cook. He missed the loss to Charleston with a hamstring injury in the 9 games since then. 20 points a game, 3 assists a game, 26 of 60 behind the arc. So the future's bright. The present, eh.
The 6-3 conference start is very impressive for this program. But
it is. I'm 100% with Tytel. I think Ron Hunter is really starting to turn the corner. They're not there this year, but you can see that they're on the road to get there. And I think in the next year or two, you're going to be hearing from this team.
You know, what's funny about Tulane is they're only halfway through their conference schedule. They've already tied their high water mark for conference wins in the American right here. They're going to smash that this year.
Yeah.
Ron Hunter can dance.
Yeah, he can.
I got Houston up there on the left, a team that's now won 10 in a row, despite being so shorthanded. So keep a look at them, especially as they get the two road games at Cincinnati and SMU coming up. But let's take a quick look at the rest of the American schedule and try to keep things moving here. We've got a couple more conferences to get to, and we're starting to run a little long on the show, honestly. But yeah. Let's jump out west to the West Coast Conference, you and Tytel both want to talk about San Francisco. I'll let you go first this time so you can steal his notes.
San Francisco is starting to scare me. They're very close to the wrong side of the bubble. They were one of my last four teams as of this morning. They have a lot of work to do. Last Thursday, they gave away a game to St. Mary's at home that they were winning the whole way and they really gave it away. The last 4 or 5 minutes, they could not have played worse. They couldn't score. They couldn't get a stop. And if San Francisco wants to make sure they make this tournament without winning the West Coast Conference, a huge game this week, Wednesday night in BYU, would be enormous. Because after that, they don't really have much till the end of the conference schedule there with St. Mary's and Gonzaga. The rest all there would just be bad losses, and they can't afford any of those. San Francisco needs a huge win in Provo later this week.
Tytel, do you steal your notes?
Most. I don't think they're going to get the win because BYU is reeling and needs this bounce back game, so it's not going to be a trap game. I thought this team was just going to be about Jamari Bouye this year, but Yawan Masalski, a.k.a. the Golden Goose from Belarus, has really taken it up a notch during the past 10 games, averaging a double-double, 15 points and 10 boards a game and 3 blocks a game. I have them as an 11 seed despite losing 3 of their past 5.
The team that's going in the right direction here, Rocco, the St. Mary's Gales, almost getting close to breaking the top 25 of the polls nationally with their huge comeback win. I think that maybe we've got forgotten about them a little bit this season also until now.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really been worried about this team for whatever reason. I just love the coaching, the defense, the depth. Tass was a monster in that comeback win at the Hilltop to beat the Dons. And, you know, they've got the BYU loss was pretty ugly, but St. Mary's will lose ugly sometimes. They lost ugly to Colorado State as well. I think they're a really, really rock solid team. I think out of those three, obviously BYU's been upset already by Pacifica and Santa Clara. San Francisco almost lost to Santa Clara as well. I think St. Mary's is the least likely to get upset because they're just so rock solid. They played a pretty good schedule. Like Missouri State came to town. They won at Utah State. They got Notre Dame and Oregon. Southern Utah is a good mid-major. So is Bellarmine. So I think St. Mary's set themselves up really well with a lot of those tests to handle the middle and the bottom of the WCC. And I think they're well on their way to a tournament bid.
Stalika, team that had the awful week this week was BYU, losing back-to-back road games in Santa Clara and Pacific after having that loss, that stumble in Utah Valley earlier this season, yet they've picked up some big road wins, so that's a little weird.
Yeah, they do have some road wins here, but now they're getting perilously closer to the wrong side of the bubble right here. But the one team that seems to actually confound me in this league is, pull up their profile, the San Diego Toreros. I'm still trying to figure out how they are still third in this conference, because I don't think they've had a win against any of the big four yet that I could recall offhand.
I think it's look at the upcoming schedule where they've got a lot of those games still to come here. That might be.
Yeah, it was at. Very backloaded. Yeah.
Their best win is at Nevada, but that's not a WCC game right here.
Yeah,
right. And the upcoming schedule here this week in the West Coast Conference, Gonzaga at BYU Saturday is the after San Francisco at BYU. So a huge game, huge week to be going to BYU home games.
And this is a hard week to pull themselves out of it. We mentioned the San Diego San Francisco or the St. Mary San Francisco game. Rocco, you were there, weren't you?
I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a
remarkable. So, no, the Santa Clara San Francisco game.
Oh, yeah. Santa Clara, San Francisco. But I was talking
which
about
which was remarkable. Yeah.
Yeah. you know, San Francisco or St. Mary's, it's the Battle of the Bay. It's another big rivalry. Do we have time, Chad, to check the Hoops HD rivalry tracker?
Sure. What two teams are we checking in here again?
Dons. Trust me, basically like driving from my house to the Dons gym.
So we're checking in San Francisco versus
St. Mary's.
St. Mary's. Okay, let's just find out how far apart they are and whether or not they've ever met in the NCAA tournament.
That's okay, yeah.
That's here. They've been here. It's going to do the math. Let's check. I think this could be an exciting one.
Look at
8 miles apart. They've never met in the NCAA tournament. Look at that.
Yeah.
And a fun fact is that Todd Golden used to play for St. Mary's, and he's never beaten them as a coach.
And I'm sure in the case of San Francisco and Oakland, 8 miles apart, but one World Series.
Sore subject.
Yeah.
The Atlantic 10 saw Davidson lose a home game to VCU, did bounce back, but struggled against LaSalle. But, Dorman, Davidson, are they still okay? Was it just a minor blip with this VCU game?
I think they're okay because they're a solid team, extremely well coached. McKillop does an unbelievable job. The team I can't take my eyes off, VCU. I like the Rams. They're starting to really play some good basketball, putting it all together. Good time to do that. I think VCU might be heard from in the conference tournament there. But Davidson, not to avoid the question, they've got some great wins there, as you can see. They did win in VCU. They're very good. They're solid. They just don't blow you away when you watch them. But everything they do is good. So, yeah, I think they're a dangerous team. And I think the St. Bonnie, the Bonnies, again, I'm waiting for them to turn it up and get going. Haven't been able to yet, but it's between these three: VCU, Davidson, and St. Bonnie.
Yeah, Rocco, you're gonna be a chance to see Davidson, the Bonnies coming up here, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm actually in Buffalo as we speak, and we're heading down there tomorrow for the game. Davidson's a team that Dorman, made good comments about. They're coming off that 15 game win streak, finally got snapped. VCU's full strength with Ace Baldwin back in full swing. I mean, they definitely have a whole different look to them since he's gotten back. And I do think this Davidson team is not a dominant team. Like you see them, even watching them Saturday against, I think it was LaSalle, they struggled to stretch that thing over double digits. So they like to just stick to their style. I'm very curious to see how they handle what is expected to be a very rowdy environment here in Olean, New York. And a Bonaventure team that is desperate, was picked to win the league, was picked to make the tournament, and basically was number one in everything in everybody's preseason. So it's basically put up or shut up time for the Bonnies. So it should be a fascinating matchup tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Going back a week, Davidson only won by 3 at Fordham also. So they've been
playing. Getting a little bit of a tailspin here. And when you look at VCU, they don't have the paper that Davidson has, but the way they're playing, they could win out to the conference tournament. They really could.
Yeah, and the thing I like about VCU is, well, VCU and Davidson did the the road win exchange program. So they both got good road wins off each other. And then VCU has been able to supplement that with wins at Dayton, Vanderbilt, and Richmond that are all landing in Q2 today. Not that they're like showcase tournament level wins, but when you start looking at the extreme bubble, which VCU is on, that really stands out. There's nobody else that I can find that has four. And that helps the Rams quite a bit right now.
Yeah, you kind of wish they weren't blown out at St. Bonaventure, but to quote the late Meatloaf, two out of three ain't bad.
How about, though, Tytel, the team that's in second place behind Davidson, how about the Patriots?
About that simply silly schedule. They played four games in the month of December. They only lost one of them. Then they only played two games in the first 3 weeks of January and lost both of them on the road. Then they played four games in the past 10 days and won all four of them. And now they have four games in 8 days, St. Louis and LaSalle this week, then a home and home with Richmond next week. It's ridiculous. Great interior scoring, 56% from two-point range is number 15 in the nation. And Colorado transfer Deshaun Schwartz has been delightful during the past four games, 17 points a game.
We've got here the upcoming schedule in the A-10, the big Davidson-St. Bonnie's game, and then Saturday, go ahead and circle this one. It is Dayton at St. Louis. It is
UBC.
This one is a brutal, brutal rivalry. Yes, can we check the Hoops HD rivalry checker? This is Dayton and St. Louis, the Arch Baron Cup. And this one is nasty. Ooh, I mean,
okay, Dayton and St. Louis, the Arch Baron Cup. Let's see how far apart they are. 8 miles apart.
Yeah, they've never met in the NCAA tournament. That's just crazy.
Let's jump over. We've been stalling on the Mountain West, but I don't think we're going to quite get this Colorado State Wyoming game over. They are in overtime as we record this, but let's talk about a couple other teams. Tytel, how about Boise State, the first place team?
14 wins in a row. The last six have been by 8 points or less. What's amazing about that is that they're the third worst free throw shooting team in the nation at 61%, but they're winning close games. Tough week for Wyoming. They get if they survive this game with Colorado State as we speak, they get to face Boise on Thursday, which could be the conference game of the year. I'm a little worried about freshman forward Tyson Dagenhart hitting the proverbial freshman wall. First six games of the year, 8 minutes a game on average. Arizona transfer Devonair Dutrieve was dismissed in early December, so they put Dagenhart in the starting lineup. Past two games, 37 minutes and 38 minutes. He's running out of steam, I fear, but I do have them as a 9 seed.
You have them as a 9 seed. Dorman, how about the rest of this conference, especially San Diego State, who suffered the bad loss to Utah State this week?
Yes, they did, and they can't afford that because this conference is rough. They got some big games coming up, but Boise State, Wyoming, Colorado State, San Diego State really cannot afford any more bad losses. It just can't happen anymore. So they go to Colorado State later this weekend. That might be, they might really need that mentally to get that team back on track, because then again, Nevada, San Jose State, Air Force, and then it doesn't get strong again till they have to go to Boise State in a home game against Utah State. San Diego State must start getting hot and get on a run if they want to make the tournament.
Talk about a team that is getting hot and to make a run for the tournament. Salika, as we record this, Wyoming is putting the finishing touches on a home win over Colorado State. Only be a tier two win, actually, but by Colorado State being 36 net heading into this game. But how about Wyoming?
Yeah, I think we can't stall any longer because it's going to be, looks like an 84-78 final score right here. And yep, that's going to be a pretty big one, especially since Wyoming was in danger of blowing a 6-point lead at the final minute of this one. Colorado State came back, but missed a free throw in the closing seconds, which forced overtime. And you throw in foul trouble for David Roddy where he fouls out. That cost the Rams right here. And as good as win this was for the Rams, I mean, for the Cowboys, the Rams are suddenly looking at their first two-game losing streak of the season.
Yeah, and bit of a tailspin here.
I was going to say that now with three conference losses, Griggs, for the Rams.
Yeah, and one of them not a good one at home to UNLV in a game where they just really looked pathetic. Now, it's hard to win at Wyoming. They're a good team, and it and they're very good at home. So I wouldn't call this a major setback as much as it was a missed opportunity at a really big win. But when you look at this profile, other than St. Mary's at home, they haven't really beaten anyone of note. Mississippi State, horrible away from home. Creighton, I forgot about that one. The Creighton win's pretty good, I suppose.
The Creighton win's decent, but Creighton, a team that we talked about, how they're heading in the wrong direction as well. Quick look at the rest of the upcoming schedule this week in the Mountain West, and then we'll go to final thoughts. And, you know, we've got the – I guess we got Boise State at Wyoming coming up on Thursday. We mentioned that earlier. That's probably the other big game
on
the schedule here. And San Diego State, Colorado State on Friday. Those are the two huge games here in this conference. On that note, though, let's go to final thoughts. And, Tytel, I'm going to start with you while I have the screen share off. I know you want to speak about this guy that's coming up on the screen.
So I think it's time for a little career retrospective for Coach Bruce Pearl. So I'll run through it. 1995, he wins the Division II title as coach at Southern Indiana. A decade later, in 2005, he leads Milwaukee to the Sweet 16. 5 years later, in 2010, he takes Tennessee to the Elite Eight. Then he gets fired the following year after being charged with unethical conduct. Then he goes to Auburn. 2017, his associate head coach, Chuck Person, was arrested for corruption and bribery. Pearl was cited as being uncooperative with the internal investigation. 2 years later, 2019, he gets Auburn to their first Final Four. This month, he got the number one ranking for the first time in Tigers history. Last Friday, he got a new eight-year contract that's going to make him coach for life. I don't know what the future holds for this guy, but he could end up with 800 wins, multiple Final Fours, and he's already the 2006 National Coach of the Year. Is this guy have a Hall of Fame resume? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. It's tough because you know, hey, you know who weren't Hall of Famers? Curt Schilling's not a Hall of Famer. Barry Bonds is not a Hall of Famer. There's a lot of guys that don't get into the Hall of Fames in their sports because of things more off the field and off the court. So I think it's an interesting debate, actually. Let me pull the screen share down and run through the rest of you here. Stalico, let me go with you next.
Yeah, we mentioned Jaden Ivey hitting the game-winning three against Ohio State for the second year in a row. He could be in some rare and elite company because let's not forget, we could be looking at potentially the first mother and son duo to win national titles. His mother, Neil Ivey, who is the head coach at Notre Dame, she was a member of the Irish team that ended up winning the national title in 2001 against, of all teams, the Purdue Boilermakers. Talk about coming full circle.
Good point. Good one. Dorman.
I'm going to stick out west and the West Coast bias. And I mentioned it when Chad asked me to speak on a few teams. I still am a strong believer the West Coast Conference deserves four teams. I still believe the Mountain West deserves four teams. The problem with it is the committee is going to have to take bids away from conferences they usually give, and it's going to have to start in the ACC. Again, I only see Miami and Duke that are worthy of teams that belong in this tournament unless someone really turns it on, but I just don't see it. And beating up each other, if someone gets hot, without beating Miami or Duke is not that impressive. I hope the committee is not on their ACC bias and what's best for the tournament and TV ratings and big blue bloods. The West Coast and the Mountain West is playing great basketball this year. They're going to lose some games because they're going to beat up each other, and there's tough road trips in those conferences. But that's great basketball, and the committee needs to reward them.
Yeah, they do. I hope they do. Rocco.
Yeah, three quick ones. WCC, as Dorman was talking about, I'm telling you guys, Santa Clara was lights out against San Francisco on Saturday night. That game was unbelievable. Back and forth, 88-85 regulation game. Both teams shot the lights out. Jalen Williams is an NBA player. And, you know, Vrankic had mono for over a month. So Santa Clara is finally back to that November form. I'm just saying, they knocked off BYU last week. Watch out for them down the stretch. They're going to knock off more teams that could complicate the four bid thing. But Santa Clara is back in the top 75. I just think that's a great, great offense. Need to learn how to play defense. Next, Mick Cronin, lifelong Bengals fan, adopted Rams fan. What the hell is he going to do for the Super Bowl? Don't bet against UCLA this week because Mick's on fire. And then lastly, the luck rating. You know, KenPom's model, if you look at the schedule, you can pick any team you want. You'll notice if you just look at the wins and losses, you'll get one record. But if you add up all the percentages, you get a different record on most teams. And that's kind of how the luck model works. It's basically assuming that if you have a lot of close games, you're going to win 50-50, right? But I think there's more to it than that, because over the last few years, I've noticed there's teams that are constantly winning, like Providence this year, and teams that are constantly losing, like Wazoo this year. And I think there's a lot to do with like late game situations, coaching, who has the best go-to clutch crunch time guys, and who has just horrible, idiot, dumb decision makers. And that's how you can like predictably get in the top 20 luck or bottom 20 luck if you start to see those tendencies. And I think Providence and Wazoo are perfect examples.
Yeah, I think that's great. You mentioned Mick Cronin as someone who's a lifelong Bengals fan. There is a season ticket holder among the D1 coaches I did not expect to hear, and that's Dan Hurley out in UConn.
Bengal guy? Big Bengal guy?
Big Bengal guy, yep. Yes.
Oh, wow. Good for them.
Greg, do you want to finish off the show here? And the screen share should be available if you need it.
Okay, yeah. So I just wanted, Stalica talked about Cincinnati a little bit earlier, and here's what they did over the weekend. They've had a lot of rough goes. Can we see that here? They've been up and down. We were kind of excited about them. We thought they were approaching the bubble for a little bit. Then they dropped the game at Temple. On Sunday, though, they came back and won in East Carolina. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the fans of Cincinnati, because yesterday this city was jacked after this game. I actually have a video here. Would you like to see it? Of the fans. Oh, crap. Where'd he go? Of the fans reacting.
Good job. Good job. That's your email there. There you go.
Okay. I can't seem to, because the screen share is up. Okay, let's
upper stop right this. Tab, puppet.
There you go.
There it's it is. Okay, yeah, here we go. This is the video of fans celebrating after they had beaten East Carolina. Wow.
Oh, good job. Actually, you kind of
I don't know
up,
why they're wearing Princeton gear, though. I'm sorry, Tito.
I can't seem to stop the stop share. Oh, there it is. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, that did not go as well as planned. But on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us.
That stunk.
On behalf of John Tytel and Rocco Miller, check him out at bracketeer.org up here. David Dorman right below me. John Sleek to one side. David Griggs to his other side, who is probably going to be thrown off of the show, at least never get to use a screen share again.
Good idea.
I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be talking to you again real soon.